You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life. I am Mike Piccinato, and in this series, we are talking with Stephen and Jenny Jones, founders and staff with Exigent Communication, as they prepare to move with their family to Berlin, Germany, and join the staff of Envision Berlin. The springboard for our conversations is Stephen's book, Transitions Across Cultures, and his Cross-Cultural Transition Handbook, which can be tailored to fit the needs of cross-cultural ministry organizations. In today's conversation, we're picking up where we left off last week, talking about the time in the neutral zone or the transition zone, the time where we're in between one circumstance or one place we're living, where we've started with some endings, and before we arrive and really are fully integrated into the new place, that time where we feel like we are a car in neutral, and it doesn't matter how much you step on the gas, you're not really going to go anywhere. Today, we're going to explore a little bit more about what that looks like in Stephen and Jenny's life. One of the illustrations you've used before, Stephen, is this line, this line that ends up just being a completely confusing circle for when people are in that neutral zone. Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, kind of like it'd be almost like if you could look at a tornado from the top or something, right? And it's just this chaos. Yeah.
And so as you were talking, Jenny, I really get the feeling that you're kind of trapped in the middle of that tornado right now, and everything is changing in ways that you might normally have rhythms for. Oh, the kids are finishing school. Here's what their summer programs are. But none of that's there right now. You're just kind of stuck in the middle of that.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's like, oh, even asking, like I had the thought a few weeks ago, well, maybe a month or so ago, I was, you know, we get the email about community education programs happening for the summer. And I'm like, I'm looking at the dates. I'm like, well, I could do swim lessons with William. That will be here. And now I'm like, that I couldn't. Could we feel the stability to get him on time anywhere? I don't know.
And even what cars will we have at that point? And like, yeah, I mean, we just, yeah.
Yeah. And Rosemary keeps, she's asking a very important question of, can I have my friends over? Can we do a fire in the back, you know, a little bonfire in the backyard? Yeah. And when can we do that? And I'm like, I want to tell you an answer, but I just don't know it. Like, we will probably have time, but to feel like there's a date that can happen.
It's like the answer is yes. The intention is yes, but practically it could end up being no completely on accident.
And so it feels like you keep grabbing for, like, I want to be intentional about endings. I want to be intentional about our time and making time for things that are important to each of us. But it feels like, you know, the sense of like grasping and just not being able to find the right, that stability point yet. Yeah.
And I think that's probably one of the things that comes out in the actual practice of transitioning cultures that's beyond the theory. There really is not a hard and fast ending point and a hard and fast transitioning point and a hard and fast beginning point. They just all kind of meld together. It's like you're right now, I feel like you guys are playing Frogger, just frantically trying to jump into the next space at the same time as you're in the middle of a whirlwind. And right, it's just this impossible situation.
I think even so, there's a, yeah, a game. I don't, it's like Frogger, but it's different, that the kids played for a while. And there are points where you feel safe. So like you get to the other side of one road, there's a whole bunch of stuff coming in front of you, and you have to keep moving because there's also the pressure of the thing coming behind you, the bottom of the screen, you know, that, you know, it'll kill you too. But it's like, okay, I have to keep moving. But right now, nothing is coming at me from the side or from the front. So it's like, oh, do I take a breath so I can look around? And you have this like split second of time to do this.
I had a moment of this illusion yesterday where I was like, oh, I feel like maybe we've made it through the busy time. And then I ended up moving furniture until 10:30 last night because we had to clear up from the yard sale we'd done with the neighbors.
Yeah, I think I've played that game, Jenny. And as soon as you stand still for too long, some kind of eagle swoops in from above. Yes. And carries you away. Yeah, yes. There's just no rest.
Yep. Yep. It's coming at you from every angle. You just can't predict it yet. You're trying to predict it, but you can't, really.
How is that impacting your guys' day-to-day mental health?
It's not great.
Yeah, well, because I think even, you know, sis, we really wanted to chat last night to process through with some close friends about, you know, the sale of the house and walking through that. And I got to about 7 o'clock. Like we had talked about it earlier in the afternoon, we got to 7 o'clock and I'm like, I don't have the capacity. I think I just need to help my kid finish his assignments and figure out where our bedding is. And I was just like, I can't even go have a meaningful conversation because I don't feel like I have the capacity to do that.
Even though also for our mental health, that's something that we need.
Right. And I find it's like the things that you push yourself through to be like, I know that's a good thing, so I'll go do it. And you get there and it's usually fine. Like it's good. Like you get past whatever you're frustrated with or upset about. And you get to the next event and you're like, oh yeah, it was really good I was here. I couldn't push past to get to the good thing on the other side.
I found I have not slept terribly well. And part of that was being at somebody else's house in a bed that made noise every time I moved. And, you know, which for some reason is often the case when we're at other people's houses. I don't know what that is. It's like, anyway, or maybe our bed does too, and I just sleep better. But I've been so exhausted, and I remember, and part of it is we've been physically more active, and then it was warm this weekend. I don't want to say hot because it was only in the 80s, but in Minnesota, that feels hot. We've been moving a lot of furniture. But I was so exhausted that a couple of days this week, I felt like I was drunk, and I wasn't. Like I hadn't, you know, like, but I felt like I was slurring my words and like I wasn't making any sense, and I was so exhausted. And then to have to be making really important decisions, like you know, with the sale of the house in the midst of that, is so uncomfortable. I feel like I'm not sure how with it I am actually, like I can't tell, or to be defending the dissertation in the midst of being like, I don't know. I find that some of my personality quirks that maybe sometimes are endearing are not right now. They're overwhelming. Is that fair?
Well, I think it's in that it's like Stephen usually is he's an external processor. I have learned to be okay with that. But it feels like now for me, I can't handle a lot of his external processing because it feels like it's bouncing and I don't move that fast. I'm like, no, you just asked me this question. You're asking me this question. Are you making a statement about this third thing way over here? So I'm sort of like, ugh.
Like I might be processing 4 or 5 different major areas of life within a minute.
Yeah. And I'm like, I can normally handle a lot of your external processing.
But my filter, the gaps are quite large in my filter right now.
Yeah.
So everything is getting through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except maybe the things that need to.
Are there other ways you're noticing that things are just kind of coming out sideways? Not yeah. all the way you intended them to come out, but they're just...
We keep having the dumbest fights.
And it's all literally about communication. It's like things that we have established and have been able to navigate or feel like, okay, I know Steven's saying that, but he means this and not this. Or I know he's not coming after me. He's frustrated. So it's like our capacity to read emotion or read the situation.
And to reframe it.
That we had before is like, why does he keep being so mad at me? Why, like, the defensiveness just comes out right away.
Or on the flip side, I'm like, why are you mad? And you're like, I'm not mad. I'm like, you're clearly mad. And then you get mad that I think you're mad, but you were already mad. You know, there's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we get caught up arguing not about a decision or a value, but it's all about a communication style.
Yeah, why are you communicating with me that way?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no way out of it. Because the whole foundation of that argument is that we're not communicating well.
And so we know that, but it's really hard to just stop.
It's been funny to me, almost funny, a couple of
now
times.
Now it's funny.
Well, no, in the moment, it's been funny to me sometimes. How,
don't say that.
how we'll be in the middle of one of these dumb fights, and then we're also like, you know, respectfully asking each other, hey, where do you want this? You know, you know, how can I help you with this other thing? And also, I'm still really frustrated with you. But it's like, it's almost like we know that the fight isn't the most real thing, but we don't know how to find our way out of it.
There was a comedian once who talked about just when dad comes home frustrated, he yells at mom, who then yells at the kid, who then yells at the next sibling, who then yells at the youngest child, who then kicks the dog. What's the dog right now in your guys' family?
That's really interesting. I don't know. So, like, where does the brunt of our collective discomfort go?
Where's the brunt, or as it trickles down, mm-hmm. how do you see it impacting your kids or how they interact with even their stuff in a way that's differently than they maybe normally would?
I mean, I almost think for one of them, maybe it's homework.
Well, how they're choosing their focus, basically.
I mean, it's like, so I think part of the way that I would think about that is with this idea of control, right? So if things feel like they're out of control, where can I exercise control? I had a student once who was in a place where, because of health, it's very important to wear shoes. And he decided he was not going to wear shoes for like a month or something. And he ended up, I think, getting worms in his feet. So that wasn't a great way to exercise control. But it makes sense when you have so little that you can control in your life, you look for where can I exercise control? And I think for each of us, that plays out a little bit differently. So, and some of the ways can be constructive too, right? It doesn't have to always be kicking the dog. Like, relatively constructive is that our kids have started taking what little cash they have and going to the store and buying a frozen pizza and cooking themselves a frozen pizza. This is very odd to me. I don't know when it started. I think it was like a week or two ago, but like yesterday.
We don't have the normal food in our house, right? Like, I'm trying to use things that were in the freezer, so snacks just haven't been as accessible. So our oldest was like, Mom, can I just go to the store and get a snack? This is after school. I'm like, yes. She's like, I have money. I'll go do it. I'm like, perfect. You go take care of that yourself. That sounds amazing.
So yesterday, we take a little nap after we moved back from my dad's. and I wake up to the smell of pizza, and I'm just completely baffled. I'm like, why does it smell like pizza in the house right now? No idea. Yeah, I don't know. So there's definitely that kind of thing.
Not only have they bought the pizza, they've baked the pizza, and they've eaten all of the pizza, and all you have left is the smell.
All of the pizza.
Yeah. That is exactly what happened. And I feel like of the ways for us to, you know, kick the dog, so to speak, that's not the worst, you know. There are definitely times that we've had to sit down and apologize to each other, all of us, all the way around, for different things, you know, where it's like, oh, yeah, actually, I wasn't yelling at you. I was yelling because I was upset about everything, and you were there. And I think it's really important to stop and name those things, like, because otherwise the internalized messages are terrible.
Yeah. Well, and you just sense that it's everybody's a little more on edge. Everybody's correcting or bossing a little bit more.
There's a lot of nitpicking. Yeah.
Like everybody. And there's, so our youngest was having trouble last week being nice. We had a friend was over with her kids helping clean stuff up, and her kids are younger and they're good. They're good kids. But our youngest was not being a nice person. So our middle son came out and was like, what are you going to do about it? He's being a terrible person. And I'm like, nothing. Like, I'm not good. Like, tell him, I don't, he's being a terrible person right now because we all feel terrible. Like, I don't know what to do. What, am I going to ground him? Am I going to send him to his room? Am I going to, he can't go to his room. He can't, there's like none of the ways of correcting are even normal right now. So I'm like, so he just walks away. He's like, ugh. I'm like so much exasperation. It's like, wait. What we can do is try to like give each other grace. I know that's hard. And for a 12-year-old, probably feels like, I don't even understand what you're saying. But even that, like, there's a sense of like, okay, how do we attempt to relate well to each other right now? I don't know.
What would you coach someone who's getting ready to enter this transition zone to do as far as how to navigate it well?
I mean, I think one of the things that we have found to be really helpful for us is finding people to process with. So even just a few minutes before we started, we had been listening to a previous episode of this podcast. And it was like, oh, that explains something. You know, it's so funny because it's like our own conversation realizing like, oh, okay, that's why I'm feeling this way. There's just something about being able to work through it. And sometimes it's working through the same thing over and over and over again, but finding people that can help you have a space to not be okay. There's a song.
So many songs actually right now, yeah, that our daughter has found.
Yeah.
Like
it's okay not to be okay. There's I'm too tired to pray is a line in a song. There's like something about coffee not being enough. I don't know. There's just all of these.
But the question is, are you going to come through?
Yeah.
I think that was part of it. Is like, do we have people in our lives that are coming through for us?
And it's mixed. It's definitely mixed.
But the answer is yes. We do have people. Not everyone.
Even those that do don't always. But
I think that feels like it. It's like, and not everybody has that luxury in transition.
Yeah.
But I think that's been one of those chords, one of those lines that we've been able to grab on. It feels like it's connected to something, is a sense of someone else being there with us.
Mm-hmm. I think the another thing that I would recommend that somebody else do is to, so if you're in a family context, is to have a fairly regular practice of checking in and saying, this is hard, to each other. And helping each other, even within your own chaotic family context, to say, yeah, the way that we're feeling makes sense because of what's happening. And that doesn't mean that the way we're feeling feels good, and it won't always feel like this. I think another thing is also to not neglect to celebrate the good that is present. And it sometimes is painful to celebrate the good that's present because you know you're going to leave a lot of it. But there, I don't know, I don't think walling yourself off to the beauty that's around you, whether that's in relationship or whether that's, you know, physical beauty and, you know, natural beauty, whatever it is that's around you, like to say, okay, this is good, and to let it be good, because your soul needs that, and to receive it as a gift. But I do think finding words for what you're feeling is really important, because otherwise you start to believe things about yourself that probably aren't the truest.
I think one way people can do that, even if they don't have someone else they can process it with, is even journaling.
Mm-hmm.
Writing out those thoughts and those feelings. And in some ways that can end up later functioning even like chalk inside a tunnel that you don't know how to get out of. And you're just leaving marks to remind yourself of where you've been, and you're seeing things again.
I mean, that's why we did what we did with the book. And I don't want to necessarily be advertising here, but we have the transitions book and the workbook. And the point of the workbook is exactly that, to give people space to say, and it, you go through it three times. One is before you go, one is while you're there, and then one is if you end up coming back, before you come back or as you come back. And it's, and the reason that it's always so you can come back and see, what was I thinking at that time? What was I processing? What was I feeling? And to have a record of it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you necessarily always have to have somebody external to you in the flesh, right? Or on the phone or whatever, but like even having a workbook or a journal or something that gives you space. But I think having some kind of prompted reflection is important, something that pulls you outside of what you're able to perceive in the moment.
I think that's been kind of the great thing about art right now. Mm-hmm. Like we mentioned, music has been, like, there are different songs that have really hit us where we've been at, or yeah, just different things that we've seen or perceived. And when words feel hard, like, what does it mean to process in ways outside of just words? Whether it's just an instrumental music, or whether that's drawing or painting or creating, and somehow it's like there are avenues that create things to help us to come back to.
I mean, sometimes I will sit down at the piano and I don't know how I'm feeling. And then as the chords turn into something, I realize, oh, that's how I'm feeling. And I don't know that I could have used words. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us today for part two of our three-part series with Stephen and Jenny Jones about the transition zone or the neutral zone. You'll want to be sure to join us next week as they conclude this three-part series. In today's episode, Stephen mentioned his cross-cultural transition handbook. If you're interested in knowing more about that or in learning how you can customize that for your own organization, be sure to follow the link in the show notes. This show is also being produced in a partnership with Envision Berlin, and Envision Berlin is launching a Discord server, a place where you can enter into conversations about a variety of things, including perhaps the way something in the show today spoke to you. If you're interested in that, you can also find a link in the show notes. Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of I Am Intercultural, a division of Exigent Communication, in partnership with Envision Berlin. Please like, share, and subscribe. Podcast music is by Mike Picanato.